So week one action here. The NFL has begun. And I just had a better week in general just because of that, even though my team got spanked like a redheaded stepchild. And other spankings and various other things took place in a good way or a bad way for many teams. Let's just talk about that. I'm Kyle, the student of the game. To my right, my co-hosts Weasel and Chris here to bring you more and more action as the season's finally underway. None of this talk, none of this prognostication, none of these predictions, because let's be honest, at least two of us look really silly right now based on our Super Bowl conditions, our predictions rather, and all three of us look really silly based on who we pick to win the NFC West. But enough about that. Speaking of things that looked really silly, the second half of the season opener of the game might have looked pretty silly, but it was still an exciting game for the first half. Weasel, give us the Thursday night opener for the Saints facing off against the Minnesota Vikings.
In the highly anticipated rematch of last year's NFC Championship game, the Saints, far from being perfect, pulled off the victory, defeating the visiting Vikings. Brett Favre, back yet once again, was 15 of 27, 55%, 171 yards, one touchdown, one INT. He was sacked once and was not beat up nearly as much as in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, and you mentioned he had a pick in there. That particular sack actually led to the interception in question.
Mm-hmm. He just, he should have took the sack, but he decided to throw it to Jonathan Bellmer instead.
In the nature of the play, it started off, I think it was a play action or something. He had his back to the play, and then he just tried to do what, well, he played Brett Favre ball and said, oh, I could do it, and shoot, you know, and it just didn't work out.
Just Brett being Brett. In the receiving game, played in Vishanti Shenko. Four catches for 76 yards, 19 yards per reception, and a touchdown. Gotta get that for us?
Yeah, since 2008, Vishanti Shenko is, the third most touchdown catches?
Third highest in touchdowns since 2008.
Only to Larry Fitzgerald and Randy Moss.
That's right.
Overrated.
Former Dolphins wide receiver Greg Camarillo had a 29-yard reception and almost pulled in a diving catch, but couldn't pull it in.
See, I can't do that where it's the Viking horn and the trumpet sound at the same time. How would that sound? No, that's not gonna go. Oh, you want to just? That's one way to do it. Anyway, we'll work on that. We'll get our sound engineers to work on that.
Adrian Peterson had 3 for 14, and Chris Garvin with Greg Lewis, each having 12-yard receptions. Now, I think Brett Favre really misses Sidney Rice, because he was throwing these high sideline passes to Percy Harvin, which would normally be catches for Sidney Rice, but they're not the same.
Well, I would even argue that there was one that was particularly long ball, and I paid special attention because he's on the fantasy team I drafted for you while you were on your cruise, so I paid attention to it more than I normally would have. There was a long ball that was also ridiculously underthrown. From my point of view, and you can chime in on this, whatever you think with it, I felt like it's an aspect of Brett Favre not being in camp, not being up hooked up with his receivers, and let's also, dropping interesting stats. First game last year was against the Browns. That particular game, Adrian Peterson went absolutely ape. Brett Favre, I think, threw just over 100 yards, like 110, something like that. Brett Favre didn't have to do a lot, and it was good because he couldn't yet because he wasn't locked into the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Playing a slightly stronger team in this first week, Favre isn't locked in yet, and hopefully he'll get locked in by next week. Kind of a big deal that game.
Now, speaking of Adrian Peterson, who thankfully didn't fumble this game, he had 19 rushes for 87 yards, 4.6 average. Percy Harvin and Albert Young combined had 4 carries for 4 yards. For the Saints, Drew Brees, 27 of 36, 75%, 237 yards, 1 touchdown, no INTs, sacked once. Marquez Colson, 7th round pick a couple years ago, 5 catches, 62 yards, 12.4 average. Devery Henderson had 2 for 38, 19 yards per reception with a touchdown. Richie Bush had 5 for 33. Robert Meacham had 3 for 33, and Lance Moore with Jeremy Shackey, they had 3 catches for 23 yards each. In the running game, Pierre Thomas, 19 rushes for 71 yards, 3.7 average with a touchdown. Reggie Bush, 2 for 14, and Drew Brees had 4 scrambles for negative 6 yards.
And
now, all throughout the playoffs, Saints kicker Garrett Hartley was ever so reliable, but in this game he missed two field goals, which kept the Vikings in the game. With Breeze showing off their Saints passing game in the first half, the Saints running game, led by Pierre Thomas, was apparent in the second half. The running game kept the Vikings from getting the ball back in the Saints' last 5-5-32 drive of the game.
Right, and then just to tack off this game, too, because the article is already present on www.thestingofgame.com, the offense for the Saints had about 7.5 minutes more time of possession. Their third down percentage was lower, but because they didn't need that many third downs. 18 first downs on the game for the Saints offense versus the Vikings 12. But speaking of games and offenses that were truly all over the place, Chris, tell us a little bit about our new featured Chicago Bears facing off against the Detroit Lions.
Well, it was almost an upset up there. I mean, Detroit was up 14-0 late in the second quarter. Javon Best scored his second rushing touchdown with just under 2 minutes, put him up 14-0. Chicago had the ball and dumped it to Matt Forte, who rumbled 89 yards for a touchdown. Very next possession for Detroit, newly acquired Julius Peppers of Chicago sacked Stafford, and Chicago recovered the ball and kicked a field goal to go into half down, 14-10. Word has it, Stafford's out for 8 weeks right now with separated shoulder. It's not looking good for Detroit. But then late in the fourth quarter, Cutler hit Forte on a 28-yard strike in the end zone for a second touchdown with a minute 32 left in the game that put Chicago up 19-14. Detroit came down the field and Sean Hill threw a ball up to Calvin Johnson. He looked like he came down with his controversial call. He had 2 feet down and went down to his hip. He palmed the ball up with one hand, rolled over it, put it on the ground, came up without the ball, and they called it incomplete. The original call was touchdown, but then they reviewed it and said the rule says he has to come up with the ball from the ground. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, we'll get to that in a minute because that's going to be a bit of a discussion. But go ahead and let's roll out the rest of the stats and then we'll get into that.
Jay Cutler for Chicago was 23 of 35 for 66%, 372 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, and 1 fumble loss.
And here's the thing, that interception was so early, sitting in the alehouse where I was, and Weasley, you can account for this because you were there too. All the Bears fans, certain Bears fans we know included, were all already freaking out after he threw an interception early. That, my friend, is a good stat line. Okay? That's the truth. Get over it. Cutler did his job. Period. Chris?
On Chicago's running game, Matt Forte had 17 attempts, 50 yards, 2.94 yards a carry. He also lost a fumble. Chester Taylor, 9 carries for 29 yards, 3.2. And Jay Cutler had 5 scrambles for 22 yards and 4.4. For the receiving game, the running back, Matt Forte, led all receivers with 151 yards on 7 catches and 2 touchdowns. He had that long 89-yard touchdown in the second quarter. David
Aromashadu
had 5 catches for 71, along with 21.
Johnny Knox.
3 for 52, along with 32 on that one. Chester Taylor, 3 for 44. Greg Olson had 4 for 37, and he also lost a fumble. On Detroit, Matt Stafford had 11 of 15 for 73%, 83 yards, and he also lost a fumble. And Sean Hill, who's came over from the 49ers, is that it?
That's correct.
Was 9 of 19 for 47%, 88 yards, 1 interception. I think his QB passing rating was like a 42% that I looked up. Javon Best led Detroit on the ground with 14 carries for 20 yards, 1.42 average, with 2 touchdowns. Jerome Felton had 2 for 7, and Maurice Morris had 2 for negative 3. Detroit's receiving game, Calvin Johnson had 4 catches for 45 yards.
Although that is a matter of some conjecture.
It could have been another 20-something yards on that one. Tony Scheffler, 6 for 43. Brian Johnson, 1 for 24. Nate Burleson, 1 for 19. And Maurice Morris had 2 for 18. Javon Best, 5 for 16, and Brandon Pettigrew, 1 for 6. Turnovers, Chicago had a total of 4, 1 interception, 3 fumbles. Detroit had two interceptions, one fumble. Detroit's defense had four sacks on Cutler. Chicago only came up with two. Which one was that Julius Peppers that put Stafford out. Time of possession, Chicago 34-42 to
25-18. Well, yeah, and I mean, and depending on who your source is, there's four. I count four because Cutler had a fumble and interception. Then we have a fumble by Forte and Olsen. So I thought it was 4-4. But regardless, that's 7 or 8 turnovers in the game. That's ridiculously bad. So we already have a jailbreak for a game already.
There's another game later on that we'll get to that has more.
That's a true statement. On offense, it seems that Chicago did dominate, but again, mistakes all over the place. You know, you can't blame Cutler for the offensive line not doing their job. You can't blame Cutler for a tight end fumbling. You can't blame Cutler for Forte fumbling, although Forte had a huge day, and anybody who was starting him with their fantasy team would have had a great time. Right, Weasel? So,
for receptions.
For receptions, right. You know, a little bit of running action. I mean, you know, he had less than 3 yards of carry, but whatever. When you bring in more than 150 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns as a running back, you're forgiven. Now, about this catch. And I was looking at it again one more time to make sure that I feel confident in the way I'm going to approach this in my head. And I do. He catches it. He rolls and kind of makes a little twisting motion, but he's able to hold the ball away from the ground in one hand. He's able to move motion it and maneuver it around. Possession is attained. There is no question about it. Anyone here have any question that he as to whether he attained possession of the ball?
No, he had possession.
He clearly had possession.
Okay. He gets up, and as he's going, he's flicking the ball down on the ground and running away because he just won a regular season game in the NFL, the highest level of football possible, in a division rivalry that's not the oldest in the league, but it's certainly up there, a number of decades stuck to it. This is a big deal.
And also, Detroit has not won an away game since 2007, so it's even bigger because that's, what, 24, 25 games away?
Is there anything else we can pile on the outcome of this
right.
catch? Okay. So, in celebration, he rolls the ball away with a little flick of his wrist and one's off. And the rule says, I'm going to paraphrase as close as I can. I wanted to write it down, but let's be honest, I didn't have enough time to hear and also write down the BS offered by the NFL rule interpretation and all these referee apologists who all need to get slapped in the face thoroughly. When the receiver lands, control must be maintained. That occurred here.
Right.
Okay? This is just like the tuck rule. Okay, not the way you're thinking, where it's a crap rule. No. The tuck rule, where Brady and the Raiders faced each other, you have to hold the ball a certain way. Whatever happened in the rules for it to be a tuck wasn't true. It got batted after the tuck. So the refs still blew it, even though the rule says one thing and it's a dumb rule. This rule is dumb. Okay? Gentlemen, at this point, and I know for me and definitely for Calvin Johnson, a.k.a. Megatron, will have to do is remove the phrase "the ground can't cause a fumble" from your head. It's fake. It's no longer that way. At least not when you're catching a pass, regardless of if it's in the end zone or what. Okay. Now, if you're a runner and you're diving, fine. Okay. But the rule says, and if you look up the rule word for word, possession must be maintained when the receiver comes down. That happened. I don't care what your interpretation is, this is a blown call. No one will be here to fix it. The rule will remain in place as it is because everybody's way too distracted by the collective bargaining agreement talks for this to come up in any meetings next year, right? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I'm betting against it. It was a blown call. Simple as that. Deal with it, Bears fans.
What I think is, if that happened in the field, they'd call that a fumble. So if it happens in the end zone, because if he came down with it, he wasn't touched. He came down with it. When he went down, he actually had the ball straight down when he was coming pick up, slipped out of his hand.
Right.
When he was coming down, it wasn't really flicked, but, I mean, he showed possession. Possession is 2 feet down,
mm-hmm.
or a knee, or an elbow,
mm-hmm.
Which he had the feet. He fell down on his leg, one on his side, in his elbow down, while he was holding the ball in his mm-hmm. hand. And just because he didn't get up with the ball, is why they're calling it was incomplete.
Well, and that's why I'm so sure that that was intentional. The way he rolls his wrist, the way he flicks his wrist,
right.
That's the first part of him getting up to go run up and celebrate.
Yeah.
That was intent.
See, but then if it's in the field of play, it's called a catch.
But then if he was in the field of play, he wouldn't have flicked his wrist.
Right, I know.
They actually say that... I thought it was only in the end zone that you have to do that, but you have to do that in the field of play also.
According to the rule.
Yeah. So, I think, I mean, of course it should have been a catch. He had clearly had possession. I think his feet were down. He had possession. His hip was down when he had
hip,
possession.
Hip, feet. I'd venture to say the entire lower half of his body hit before he even whirls around to put the ball down.
Now,
okay, there's no question.
Well, I'm on the record for saying it should have been a catch. I mean, looking on the other side, it's just that, and maybe he got a little lazy with bringing it in, because when you're in the end zone, all players, like that Forte on that one catch, he like turned around and he made sure he caught it and rolled in the end zone and had possession of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think he was lazy. It was an amazing catch, but I mean, maybe he could have like when he caught it, was bringing it down, like curled it in. Easier said than done, because it was an amazing catch.
That's right. That's not necessarily wrong, but that's something you can only do with the 20/20 of hindsight, knowing the refs are going to rate this call like a redheaded stepchild, okay? No offense to any redheaded stepchildren who listen to the show. But, so, the Lions already screwed up enough, and then, you know, the refs are on the bandwagon too. I tell you, if this were Al Davis, he'd have sued the league because he would be afraid, he'd be thinking there was some sort of controversy against him.
Yeah, here's the exact rule. If a player goes down to the ground in the act of catching a pass, with or without contact by the opponent, he must maintain control of the ball after he touches the ground, which he did, whether in the field of play of the or the end zone.
Which, as Weasel said,
if he loses control of the ball and the ball touches the ground before he regains control, the pass is incomplete.
Right.
Okay.
But
he had control still before the ball touched the ground.
Period.
Right. So that doesn't matter.
That's a blown call.
If he regains control prior to the ball touching the ground, the pass is complete. So right there, it says...
That part's obvious because that's
right.
Just your basic passing.
But right there, it says he had complete control of the ball when he went down. So it should be a touchdown. I mean, they consider that an incomplete pass. But then you can get someone that can leap over and land out of bounds, just have the ball across the plane, and they call that a touchdown.
While twirling their body in such a manner of catching a pass, and then it comes out later during the middle of the play, like a certain Lance Moore touchdown by the Saints last year. Oh, full circle. Anyways, enough about that. Refs suck. Moving on. Speaking of things that normally suck, we're talking about the Bills, and they're playing against the Dolphins. However, the Dolphins didn't have their most impressive outing as they win the game 15-10. Chad Henne had 21 for 34, 62% for 182 yards passing. Trent Edwards for the Bills had a similar kind of day with one big difference. He had a touchdown. 18 completions, 34 yards, 53%, 139 yards. On the ground, the Dolphins strong once again. What can Brown do for you? The answer, my friend, still everything. 13 carries, 65 yards for running Brown, 5 yards of carry with a touchdown. Points for me. Ricky Williams had 18 carries of his own for 62 yards, a 3.4 carry. Fred Jackson, leading the ground assault for the Bills, did quite a bit worse with 4 carries for 19 yards, about 4 yards a carry. Near 5. Looking at the passing game, Brandon Marshall, on his Dolphins debut in the regular season, had 8 catches for 53 yards. Devon Bess had 6 catches for 51. And Anthony Fasano, apparently remembering that he plays for the Dolphins in the NFL compared to last year's performance, 3 catches, 46 yards. Steve Johnson. Yeah, everybody remembers that great star receiver, Steve Johnson, right? Nobody knows who. Exactly. led the receiver corps for the Bills in yards, 3 catches for 40 yards. Roscoe Parrish had 2 for 33, and Lee Evans had 4 for 34 for them. The touchdown for the Bills was caught by Steve Johnson. That's why I have to put it down. Looking at the offensive domination, the score was close. On offense, Miami more appeared to dominate. They just happened to have not as many points as they should, based on not finishing and getting good conversions. But we had 19 first downs for the Dolphins.
8-for-18 on third down conversions. That's 44%. That's an excellent job. Also dominating 13 minutes, closer to 14 minutes in time of possession.
An interesting stat, though, the Bills, they flipped it up. With about 5 minutes left in the fourth, they only had 72 yards of total offense.
Not a good day.
You want to show the dominance of the Dolphins, even though the score doesn't show it.
So, Dolphin fans, chin up. Everything's still looking pretty decent for you so far. With that game out of the way, we'll jump over to the Browns facing off against the Bucks. Weasel, tell us something.
The Bucks get their opening day victory over the Browns, 17-14. Josh Freeman, in his second year, 17-28, 60%, 182 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 INT. He was sacked 3 times. Michael Spurlock, 2 catches for 49 yards, 24.5 yards per reception with a touchdown. Sammy Schulter, 2-for-32, 16 yards per reception. Tight end Kellen Winslow, 4-for-32. Rookie wide receiver Mike Williams, 5-for-30 with a touchdown. And running back Cadillac Williams, 2-for-23.
This may be my fault. Who's Sammy Schulter?
He's like a wide receiver.
You mean Sammy Schroeder, perhaps?
Schroeder. Yeah.
Schroeder. I only bring him up because he started to emerge last year, and he's actually one of the few shining points for the Bucks on the year.
Schroeder. What did I say?
Schroeder. You said Schroeder. You put an H instead of an or a T. It's all good, though.
Oh, whatever.
We're not trying to hate. We're just, you know, like I said, you got to look at it from the Bucks fans' point of view, okay? They're the reason why the Bucks fan requests us to do it. Schroeder was one of the few shining points in this offense, man. Let's make it work.
All right.
Since you typed it up, the D and the H are really close to each other. You might have just did it.
That's a true statement.
I'm looking at your hater already messed up.
Technology is evil. No, moving on.
The Cadillac also had 22 rushes for 75 yards, 3.4 average. Josh Freeman had 2 scrambles for 34 yards. Ernest Graham lost the fumble inside the 5 late in that game.
No!
But had 6 for 10, 1.7 average.
Okay, so he had a fumble and he had a crappy running stat day. Awesome.
For the Browns, Jake DeLone. 20 of 37, 54%, 227 yards,
that's
one touchdown.
Bad. That's not bad.
2 INTs.
Oh!
He was not sent. The multi-talented Joshua Cribbs had a 9-yard completion.
Like, if there's some hip way, like, you could put multitasking, like, slash is taken, obviously, thanks to Cordell Stewart. If we could come up with some... There's the call to arms for the fan base out there. I want a nickname for Josh Cribbs. That goes to multitasking, but that's cool because the multitasker. Yo, what is this? An Office Depot commercial? Come on.
I said multi-town.
No. That's not hitting on you. You're fine.
All right. In the receiving game, tight end Evan Moore, 3 catches for 87 yards, 29 average. Muhammad Massafoy had 2 for 46, 23 yards per reception with a touchdown. Chancey Stuckey had 4 for 30. Running back Peyton Hills had 4 for 24. Tight end Benjamin Watson, 3 for 16.
Not to mention Peyton Hills, you've probably touched on his running performance. Yeah, he had a fumble on the day, but again, we've talked about him before on this show as he's probably one of the most underappreciated players on any team. I'm glad to see him get a bit more featured role, even though it's with a, well, less than 4 minute thing. And just like Sammy Schroeder for the Bucks, Mohamed Massaquoi, a shining spot from last year for the Browns offense.
So, Jerome Harrison had 9 rushes for 52 yards, 5.8 average. Peyton Hillis was a red zone fumble, too.
No!
But he had 9 for 41, 4.6 average. And Joshua Cribbs, 3 for 11, 3.7 average.
A little busy.
Going into the second half, the Browns were up 14-10. After a scoreless third quarter for both teams, Josh Freeman threw the game-winning touchdown, 33-yarder, to Michael Spurlock with 7 minutes remaining in the game.
Okay, Bucks fans, I'm not going to try to give you a hard time. Be happy about your win, but let me keep one thing in the air. Remember, thou art mortal. It was the Browns. Okay, let that sink. It was the Browns.
Let them enjoy it, Kyle. Let them enjoy it.
Exactly.
Let them enjoy it.
I did enjoy it, but now Sunday's over.
Reality check.
Speaking of pieces of reality, reality was harsh in this great game. Chris, tell us why.
About the 9 turnover game. 9 turnovers, a safety, a botched punt, and a Ranger in the second half. I'm talking about the New York Giants versus the Carolina Panthers. Giants won 31-18. Wasn't very showing that great. Eli Manning came out passing. Hit Kevin Boss first play, one for 11 yards. Two, three plays later, Kevin Boss goes out with a concussion. Eli Manning the whole first half. I'll go over the stats. He had 20 completions for 30 yards, 20 of 30 for 263 yards, 67%, three touchdowns, three interceptions. Two of those interceptions came in the first half. He was 11 of 18 in the first half. I remember looking at that stat with the two interceptions, but everything was high from him. Kevin Boss got hit with a ball. It was on a free play. Carolina jumped offsides. He went deep. He threw it high. He went up and he got hit from the back and the safety came down off it.
So, based on your little preamble there, it's starting to sound like it should have been a Christmas camp. Three interceptions, two fumbles, and a screw-up on a bad punch.
Right. Eli Manning's counterpart, Matt Moore for Carolina, had 14 of 33 for 182 yards, 43% completion, with one touchdown, and he also had three interceptions. He left the game with a concussion late in the fourth quarter. So, rookie Jimmy Clausen from Notre Dame came in, and he was 0 for 2. On the ground, the Giants in the first half had negative 2 yards rushing. Let's say that. To Carolina had 100 and something, I think. Ahmad Bradshaw ended the game with 20 carries, 76 yards, 3.8 average. They started the game with negative 2 yards rushing. Brandon Jacobs had 12 carries for 44 yards and a 3.7 average. And they started with negative 2 yards.
So what were they doing in the second half, Chris?
They showed up to find, I guess, the new stadium jitters or something, and Carolina forgot to come out of the locker room.
Well, and from what I saw, the preseason was a little shaky for the Giants as well.
Right, yeah. Ahmad Bradshaw had one rushing touchdown. He had a long run of 39, which the safety for Carolina just looked at him and watched him run right past him, which was kind of funny. He didn't know what he was doing. I guess he didn't realize that Ahmad Bradshaw had the ball.
So you said it was for 39?
Yeah.
So that means he was 19 for 37 beyond that and less than 2 yards a carry for the rest of the game?
Right.
Awesome.
That was the same thing with Brandon Jacobs. 12 for 44, his long of 22. So he was 11 for 22 for 2 yards of carry.
Just a little reality check for you, Giants fans.
Carolina, D'Angelo Williams had 16 carries for 62 yards, a 3.9 average. He had a long of 29. So 15 for 33. Williams was a little over 2.
Did we see a theme?
Matt Moore had 2 scrambles for 15 yards. Jonathan Stewart was 5 for 12, which is 2.4 average. In the receiving game, the Giants, Mario Manningham had 4 catches for 85 yards. Hakeem Nicks had 4 catches for 75 yards and 3 touchdown catches.
That's a little busy.
The other Steve Smith, not the Steve Smith.
Not the one who broke his arm in the flag football game.
Had 5 catches for 43 yards. Brandon Jacobs, 2 for 21. Travis Beckham, do you know who that is?
No.
Well, he's the starting tight end for the New York Giants now since Kevin Boss is out. He had 2 catches for 17 yards, and that goes out to anyone that's out there that's a tight end. Have your agent contact the Giants. They only have 1 tight end.
Wow.
Right now. They had William Beattie, who is a left tackle, in their big formation.
Oh, in the jumbo?
He comes in on the goal line usually, but they had him, which is kind of funny looking at him on pass plays. He kind of wants to go out a little bit since he's playing the tight end, but he has to kind of stay there. Kevin Boss had that 1 catch for 11 yards. Carolina side, the Steve Smith had 5 catches for 75 yards and 1 touchdown. Dwayne Jarrett, 2 for 40. Mike Goodson, 3 for 31. Rookie from LSU, Brandon LaFell, had 2 for 22, and Dante Rosario had 2 for 14. So going over the turnovers, Giants lost the fumble, which was Ahmad Bradshaw, and had 3 interceptions. Carolina had two lost fumbles, which was from, who was it? Matt Moore had one.
And J.J. Jansen with the long snapper.
Yeah, J.J. Jansen, the long snapper, which their ball was, it was raining, and I guess the ball kind of stuck or something. I don't know what happened. Slipped out of his hand or something, but the thing didn't even hit the second line in the block.
So essentially a bad snap.
Right. Time of possession, Giants 34-39 to the Carolinas 25-21. But interesting thing on here, the new Giants defensive formation on third down. I mean, you got...
Yeah, we touched on this in preseason, right.
Right. You got Jason Pierre-Paul, Matthias Kiwanuka, Justin Tuck, and Osayu Manara.
Everybody noticed that we don't have a single defensive tackle in that formation.
Right. Cofield and Campy is on the bench on third and long. Carolina, I wish I had the stat for third down. Carolina was completing a lot of third and long.
Yeah.
Third and long because they were not getting a push up front.
And their third down conversion was 8 for 17 at 47%. That's a good stat.
However, when Matt Moore lost that fumble with went out with a concussion, they had that formation in, and Osayu Manara was the one that sacked them, caused the fumble. It was in the end zone, but offensive lineman that got beat by Osayu Manara picked up the ball and got out for like a 1 yard gain.
So that's precisely what happened. I mean, with that formation and it's 47% third down conversion percentage, it was a great and creative idea. Chris and I, as line guys, were both very, very interested in seeing it. Gosh, what is it you say when that happens, Weasel? Oh, fail. moving on to speaking of things that were fail. Speaking of things that were fail, the New England Patriots were playing off against the Cincinnati Bengals. It's supposed to be a big deal, you know. The Bengals are looking good. They got T.O. They got Chad Johnson. And a good setup. Carson Palmer's back, ready to do some damage, facing off against Randy Moss and a returning Wes the Weapon Welker, as you know, Golden Boy Brady just got his latest contract thing where he's worth, you know, $19 million a year guaranteed, and it's looking really like it's going to be a great game. Look, I know the score is only 38-24. Halftime, 24-3, was it? Oh, and then, by the way, at the very first part of the second half, it was 31-3 after they gave up a special teams touchdown on kickoff.
Also, that was an interception return to make it 24. Also, that was
right.
A long interception return.
Right. But for those of us who had fantasy players that may have been involved, which might have been somebody in this room, right, Weasel? We'll go look at Carson Palmer, who was 34-50, 68%, 345 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an INT. I think there's at least one other game we're covering today where a passer delivered more than 50 passes. I always get worried when I see that. A lack of balance is a key to a loss. However, when you're down 31-3, you're going to be throwing the ball. That's kind of how it works. Tom Golden Boy Brady was 25-35, 71%, 258 yards, 3 touchdowns. Pretty decent day. Cedric Benson for the Bengals had 15 carries, 43 yards on the ground, 2.9 a carry. Managed a touchdown, however, also lost a fumble. Bernard Scott on the ground had 6 carries for the Bengals, 35 yards, 5.8 a carry. Fred, I am not injury-prone Taylor, 14 carries, 71 yards, 3.9 a carry for the Patriots. Kevin Falk also contributed 3 carries for 23 yards, just under 8 yards a carry. We're not worried about that. And then we had Chad Johnson, who had 12 catches for 159 yards. He did leave the game early. Jordan Shipley. Anybody?
Rookie from Texas.
Rookie from Texas. Very good. Actually, I think Chris saw him whoop up on UCF a little bit a few years ago when he was going to be
last year, kick returner and receiver.
Mm-hmm. 5 catches, 82 yards. Terrell Owens had 7 catches and 53 yards in his Bengal debut. He, too, would also leave the game early. Jermaine Gresham had 6 catches for 25 yards and a touchdown.
And a rookie also.
That's right. Wes the Weapon Welker had 8 catches for 64 yards and 2 touchdowns. Some of us was worried about his ability to return. Not so much. What do you got?
Jets 3-0.
A little update for the game. Jets up 3-0. This won't matter, you know, tomorrow when you're listening to it, but just in case.
You can just tell one time we were taping this.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly. I thought you had a stat. That's why I looked at it. Anyway, so Randy Moss had 5 catches for 59 yards. Kevin Falk had 4 catches for 47 yards. And tight end Aaron Hernandez, with the recent departure of Daniel Graham, 1 catch, 45 yards. We all have seen in the past how Brady could check down.
That was another rookie right there.
That's right.
From Florida.
Then we have both offensive did really well on third down, it would appear. 8 for 15 for the Bengals, 52%, bested only by the 9 for 13 by the New England Patriots, 69%. However, without any turnovers to give the Bengals any hope, the Patriots won the game. Let's keep something in perspective, though. It's not so much that the Patriots played better defense than we thought they would. It was more that, well, mistakes were being made and by the Bengals, and they, I think there was more of a jitters of, oh my God, it's the Patriots. Look, somebody's got to remember that these guys aren't that good anymore. They're mortals again. There's no need to get nervous anymore, people. Let's work on that. Just saying.
Here's an update for you. I mean, it's not off topic, kind of not New England. Their offensive line, the Bankin.
Yeah.
Contract dispute. I mean, it's been going on for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, we're going to sit down, have, you know, get him on the contract and everything. There's talks about him going to agree. They called him up, said, hey, I want you to call the owner, Kraft, and apologize to him. Okay, no problem. I'll do that. Called him, had a good talk with Kraft and everything, came into the meeting to go sit down and everything. Oh, we want you to have a public apology out to everyone. And he said he wouldn't do it, so they're not going to be signing the contract. He's not going to be playing
Wow. That's good business. Make it into a peen contest. Awesome. Well, speaking of things that were maybe less entertaining than such a peen contest, I give you the first part of the Steelers and Falcon game, which ended actually quite excitingly. But Weasel, tell us a little bit about that game and why both teams struggled so bad.
Well, the Steelers without Big Ben Roethlisberger for the first 4 games of the season. Close game, but the Steelers held on to have a 15-9 overtime victory over the Falcons. At quarterback for the Steelers, Dennis Dixon, 18 of 26, 69%.
Alright.
236 yards, no touchdowns, 1 INT, sacked 3 times.
Now let me give you a little pop quiz. This was his second NFL start. Last year, I believe it was, he started against the Ravens in a pretty important game. They lost in OT. That loss was a better performance than this win by Dennis Dixon. True or false?
With the exception of the last passing through, which was an interception return for a touchdown, last year's was better.
Well, I think that's kind of obvious, but in that case, yeah, I think we'll just go with truth.
Yeah.
Go ahead, man.
So, Hines Ward, 6 catches for 108 yards, 18 yards per reception. Mike Wallace, 2 for 62, 31 yards per reception. Tight end Keith Miller at 4 for 40. Going into overtime, Rashard Mendenhall had 21 rushes for 70 yards, 3.3 average. First play in overtime, he had the game-winning touchdown with a 50-yard run. Isaac Redmond, 6 for 19, 3.2 yards per attempt. And Dennis Dixon had 2 scrambles for 4 yards.
You know, and the thing worth mentioning for Mendenhall is he still did a pretty good job before that big run, so it's not like his stats were that
3.3 yards per attempt is respectable.
Yeah, excellent.
For the Falcons, Matt Ryan was 27 of 44, 61%, 252 yards, no touchdowns, 1 INT. The INT was in the fourth quarter by Steelers safety Troy Polamalu. More on that later.
Oh, yes, definitely.
In the receiving game, Roddy White, 13 catches for 111 yards, 8.5 average. Gary Douglas had 3 for 39, 13 yards per reception. Eric Weems had 4 for 36. Tight end Tony Gonzalez had 2 for 35. In the running game for the Falcons, Michael the Burner Turner, 19 rushes for 42 yards, 2.2 average.
Not so much.
Jerry Snorwick had 2 for 8.
Michael the Burned Out Turner.
I like that.
That's him.
I think Ricky already got that one.
What?
I think Ricky Williams already got that one.
I thought that was Burn Joint. We'll work on that.
Matt Ryan had 2 scrambles with 4 yards. The usually reliable Steelers kicker Jeffrey had 2 missed field goals, the second of which was wide right with only 43 seconds remaining in the game. That was set up by Polamalu's tiptoed sideline interception late in the game in Falcons territory.
Right.
Now, the game was went into overtime, locked up at 9-all. After the Steelers knee stopped the Falcons in their first possession in OT, Steelers running back Rashard Mendenhall takes the first play for the Steelers 50 yards to the house for the game-winning touchdown.
You know, we're talking about Reed again. If I'm the Steelers, I'm shopping very seriously for at least a backup kicker. Because isn't this... I remember last year, there were other situations like this with Reed. Now, Reed did kick 3 of 5 field goals on the day. And was a, if not the, major scoring force for the Steelers. But... more controversy about whether or not he's Shankopotamus.
What was the distance of doing this?
Well, the first one was 55.
Yeah, so
okay, so that doesn't really count.
The second one was about a 35-yarder. Paul Mahomes' interception was at the 30-yard line. We still got like 10 yards after that.
Okay, so let's see that 50. So let's take that 55-yarder off the board. That's 3 for 4.
That's not bad.
I mean, settle down, Steeler fans. It's still too early to pull the Shankopotamus gun.
I know.
Just saying. However,
when you got this
whole thing going on, see that this kind of thing messes with the kicker's head. That is a more cerebral position than a quarterback even. You know, see how Michael Vick ran all over the Packers in that one touchdown loss. But when you got something when they're still doubting you for this, it's only a matter of time before it chips away. That worries if I'm a Steelers fan.
I mean, look at Lindell for Buffalo. Missed a 64-yard field goal or whatever right before half.
Oh, yeah, he's cut. So, you had anything more on that, or did you wrap it up?
Really? I'm good.
All right, man. So, in that case, we head over to the Jacksonville Jaguars facing off against Friar Tebow.
There was a Tebow sighting.
Yes, in Friar Tebow and the Denver Broncos, and yes, there were 2 Tebow sightings, 2 carries for 2 yards. Big day. I didn't even write it down on my sheet because I really didn't care that much.
Yeah, there was a funny picture in the newspaper of Tebow coming to town and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The Jaguars had a sellout game and everything, and mm-hmm. There's like the owners are like, you drafted the wrong person.
Yeah,
which is right, probably, but you know.
Fiscally speaking, you have a point, and I mean, not to get too much into it now, but the point has been made on the show about how that team's in trouble because of various fiscal things in the league and such. But something to get excited about, much more than Tebow, if you're a Jags fan at least, 16 for 21 by David Garrard, no interceptions, 170 yards, 3 touchdowns. 2 years ago, he was the most accurate quarterback, or at least the one with the fewest amount of interceptions, and he returned to that form to help the Jags win this game 24-17.
Well, that's the problem. Last year, he had a lot of offensive line injuries. I mean, one lineman got shot last year, so
yeah.
He was out the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of injuries along that, so that kind of helps too. I mean, he's got his offensive line back, he's not strong.
Yeah, that's always a big deal when you got proper protection, and I mean, 76%. You can't front on that. Really, you can't front too much on the performance of Kyle Orton, who had 21 of 33, 64%, 295 yards with a touchdown. Also, however, unfortunately for the Broncos, managed an INT. No Sean Moreno making it back just in time for the season. He had 15 carries for 60 yards, about 4 yards carry with a touchdown. Correll Bellcalter also making his return from a preseason injury at 6 carries, 15 yards, 2.5 a carry. Did, however, lose a fumble. Maurice Jones-Drew, the kid they call Mojo, had 23 carries for 98 yards, 4.3 a carry. And backup Rashard Jennings also saw 4 carries with 26 yards, his own 4.5 a carry. For the Broncos, the receiving threat with the departure of Brandon Marshall was a very interesting conversation. Well, the one who led in receiving yards for the Broncos, Brandon Lloyd, former 49er and Redskin, had 5 catches for 117 yards. Eddie Royal had 8 catches for 98. Bart Gaffney, 3 catches, 34 yards, and a touchdown. In the air for the Jags, Mike Thomas had 6 catches for 89 yards. Mercedes Lewis had 2 catches for 31 yards and 2 touchdowns. And Kasim Osbeth, former Charger, 1 catch, 24 yards, and a touchdown. And Michael Sims-Walker with a comparatively, let's just say he's non-existent in this game.
Zero.
Folks. Nothing. Nil. Niente. Sucks if he's on your fantasy team. So on the strength of winning the turnover battle with this one, the Jags prevail by a single score. If that can maintain, I mean, gentlemen, we all know that Elvis Dumervil is out for Broncos with a pectoral tear for pretty much a year. Their defense isn't that formidable anyway. Enjoy it, but keep it real, Jags fans. Let's see what they can do against an actual defense. Speaking of proving things, the Texans had a lot to prove. Previously being 1-for-15 facing off against the Colts. What do you got, Chris?
Yeah, if I would say that Peyton Manning would complete 78% of his passes and throw for 433 yards and 3 touchdowns, what do you think the outcome?
That's unfortunate. I guess the Texans lost their season opener.
Right, you would think so. Indianapolis found themselves in the fourth quarter down 27-10. Everyone remembers from last year. They were in Houston. In the fourth quarter, they were down 27-10. But difference this year is Schaub's healthy, and they don't have Sage Rosenfeld throwing 3 interceptions in the fourth quarter like last year.
For me, more importantly, you also have to mention Arian Foster.
Arian Foster.
Arian
yes,
Foster.
Arian.
I will get to that.
I added a letter, my bad.
But, you know, they're down 27-10 in the fourth quarter. You know the outcome. Peyton Manning's winner. Winners want ball. Problem is his defense was not winners. They could not stop the run.
And let's be honest, the Colts' running game hasn't been all that lately, too. Anybody else thought it kind of sounded like Christopher Walken? And let's be honest.
I mean, stopping the run, they lost 34-24 to Houston. Last year, Houston's offense rushing was ranked 30th in the league. Arian Foster ended the day with 231 yards. That is the second most on an opening day since 1933 in NFL history. The only one that has more yards on opening day was O.J. Simpson, 250 yards in 1973 when he was with Buffalo, and that was against New England.
And even more impressive to me, that's all great numbers, but to me, being the stat guy and the data analyst for a living and all this other stuff, 33 carries, 7 yards a carry, absolutely retarded.
Three touchdowns. He had a 42 was the longest one.
So
what if we take out the 42 yards?
Yeah, I was just why? Thank you. why you got to show disdain? Why you got to be like that? He's still 32 for 189. Now I'm not very fresh on my 32 times tables, but I know for a fact that he's still around. He's just under 6 yards a carry anyway. Are you happy with that, Weasel?
Fine.
Yeah, great. Chris?
For 189?
Yeah.
It was just under 6.
Yeah, you like that, don't you, Weasel?
Peyton Manning was 40 of 57. 40 of 57. I had to check this 3 times to make sure I was right.
No, it's 40 of 57. I got it, too.
Yeah. For 70% of his completions, 433 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Matt Schaub, 9 of 17 for 53%. We have 98 yards. Yes. Right? No, 107. Sorry.
I'm
looking at something else.
I didn't see what you were talking about.
No, Matt Schaub, 107 yards.
I thought you were. You looked at me and I'm like, I don't know what you want. What'd I do?
No. With 1 touchdown and 1 interception. So if you're looking at just the stats on these two, you see Manning throw for 433 and Schaub throw for 107. You would think, Indianapolis blew him out.
But then I would look down and
see. But then you go into the running game.
Well, I wasn't even going to go there, but I would see 4 of 12 on third down for 33% and 6 of 11 by the Texans on third down for 54%. Kind of a big deal.
Joseph Addai had 10 rushes for 44 yards, 4.4 average. His longest was 17. Arian Foster, like we said, 33 for 231. Seven in average, 3 touchdowns. Steve Slayton, 6 for 29 at 4.8 average. For Indianapolis receiving, Austin Collie had 10 catches for 131 yards, 1 touchdown. Also, he lost a fumble. He had a long of 73. I mean, he was 9 for 58 yards after you kicked that one away.
Yeah, so what, about 6 yards?
All right. Reggie Wayne, 7 for 99, 1 touchdown. Dallas Clark, 11 of 80 for 1 touchdown. Pierre Garçon, 4 for 75. Adai at 6 for 29. Anthony Gonzalez left with a knee injury. In the game, he had 1 for 12. For Houston, Andre Johnson had 3 catches for 33 yards. His longest was 21. Kevin Walter had 2 for 29 yards and 1 touchdown. His was a 23-yard touchdown catch. And then Jacoby Jones had 2 for 29. Owen Daniels had 1 for 9, and he lost the turnovers, like I said, Indianapolis lost the fumble, which was from Austin Colley. Houston had 1 interception. Each had 2 sacks. Time of possession was about even.
Right, and I mean, the big deal there, I mean, look, this is one where no matter what the stats say, there's really only one that's important if you look at Foster's stats. And Weasel was pointing out to me while you were talking, Bob Sanders left the game early. So let's get this right. Bob Sanders leaves the game early, and someone has a record name against the Colts defense running. Coincidence? History says no. Okay.
Right, I think they said that he's going to be out next week, too.
Little stat sure. that I heard, I believe it was either Rodney Harrison or Tony Dungy dropped on Sunday night. Bob Sanders has now missed time in 49 games in recent seasons compared to 48 that he's seen time in the whole game.
Hmm.
Interesting guy. So that will do it for us for our weekly breakdown of the games. If you have anything you'd like to add, go ahead and email us at thesotg@gmail.com. Feel free to visit the site, www.thestudentofgame.com, leave some comments, and also follow us on Twitter. Then you can see when we post up username TheSOTG. Until next time, for Chris and Weasel, I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game. See you in week 2.